a person stood up at a public committee meeting at the podium with the media present. It was streaming just like this is streaming. And this Georgian, and God bless her for her beliefs, but she said, this particular bill before the Health Committee of the Senate, and she said, the only reason Jeff Breedlove wants this bill to pass is so that he can get taxpayer dollars to buy drugs for his drug addict friends.
Well, wow.
This wasn't 1973. This was 2 years ago. In public.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, people of the earth, welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery. And Bailey. A show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. In other words, real stories, real people, real life. This is the Most High Show. We got Jason on the ones and twos. We got Brian doing quality control. We got an in-studio audience. Sarah with an H is here.
Hello.
And a good friend of the show is here, Jeff Breedlove.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
Yeah. So Jeff is a strategic policy advisor for the Georgia Council for Recovery. And this, you know, it's almost like a year to the date.
That's what they told me.
Yeah.
A year ago last week.
You can book me for next year. Same thing.
Yeah, there we go. And the last episode, we covered some of your recovery journey. But I think for any new listeners or anyone who doesn't know that, you know, if you want to just kind of like a short highlight of kind of how you got to where you are
know,
today.
You know, people that, some of these people that know me here, I'm sure can testify that the words short, me, and talking don't go well together. But I'm Jeff Breedlove, and I'm a person in what I say long-term recovery. And that means to me that I've known the hope and joy of recovery for 8 years after 30 years of the hell of active addiction.
Yeah, that's 8 years, baby. Yeah.
So, look, I was born and raised actually in Atlanta itself. Grew up here in the metro area, lived all over the place. And, you know, I started active addiction, I say when I was 20, because I can do the math. Mm-hmm. Could have been 19, but I say 20. And it went off and on, and I always remind people, all jokes aside, that when I started active addiction, we didn't have cell phones, much less smartphones. Mm-hmm. And society was very different. Mm-hmm. It was very common to leave your house and not be in touch with somebody for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours later. We didn't have little tracking apps, so you knew where everybody, are they over at the crack hotel? I don't know. You know, that was just different. And I learned how to manipulate and lie within the reality of our time 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And
make sure you get up on the mic.
Over that time, I had different phases of my active addiction. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, there was a period of 7 years where I didn't use at all, and I thought I was, quote, cured. And I was nowhere close to being cured. Mm-hmm. But all that long story culminates in DeKalb County, Georgia, where we are right now. In October of 2016, when I was working for a county commissioner in DeKalb County, I was her chief of staff, and I decided on a random Friday that I could handle $10 worth of crack cocaine, and I deserved it. Mm. And that culminated on that particular occasion with my arrest, being charged with a felony, which is in itself bad enough. Who wants to be charged with a felony? Nobody. But for me, there's more. Because what I found out when I got out of jail was that I'd made the news in Atlanta for those days, made the news for 6 or 7 days. And one of the things that led to my surrender and acceptance of the fact that this was something that I couldn't just keep handling the way I had been doing was I couldn't make the Google links go away to all the news stories. And I realized that I didn't have anonymity in that regard. Not that if I walked in the grocery store, it'd be like, oh, there's Robert Downey Jr. No, in all seriousness, not that at all. But if I applied for a job or I met somebody socially and they went to Google me, it was crackhead chief of staff headlines. Mm. So that's kind of how I, the quickest version of kind of how I was in active addiction for a long time. And I went to a place called Mar just around the corner. They're celebrating 50 years this year. And Mar saved my life.
Yeah. Let me tell you what happens when you Google you now. It's a pretty, if I can find it quick enough.
Do you need help using Google?
Huh? No, I don't need help using Google. Jeffrey Love is a prominent recovery advocate and public policy professional based in Georgia, known for leadership in substance use recovery and his candid sharing of his personal journey with addiction.
Well, that's all right. Mm. It's okay.
What a thing to be known for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. What comes out now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying, because I had not seen that. So thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, that just proves my point that recovery is real. Yeah. And it's real for anybody and everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's a, you know, to kind of have that kind of public fall, and especially with a career that's really connected to public opinion and public views and all that, and to still be trucking and advocating for the rest of us now and still in that same, I guess, game or field, so to speak.
Feels like a game sometimes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a game. It's like Risk, which is one of my favorite board games growing up. But unfortunately, it's not a game. My son is on the screen all the time playing those games. He loves that Madden football game. Unfortunately for us, all my brothers and sisters, and the families who lost somebody to our disease, the outcome is real, not imaginary. There's no reset button.
Mm-hmm.
It's very real what we're dealing with.
Yeah. And I think that leads to some of the topics that we're going to cover today, which is, you know, I think until, you know, you and I met and got acquainted and I kind of hanging around and seeing what you were doing, I think I kind of personally thought politics is politics and they're all, you know, smoke and mirrors and smile in your face and stab you in the back and it's a whole, and they're doing their thing and I'm going to do my thing. And one of the, what I hope in this episode is I think you're a great person to help us to connect why it's important for people in recovery, people who love someone in recovery, to know what's going on in policies at a local level, at federal levels, to understand why that's important, how policy can shift and change our own recovery journeys or opportunities for people to access recovery resources. So that's a little bit what we're going to talk about today.
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. Sarah, you want to ask the first question?
Yeah, I mean, it really is just paraphrasing your summation, but why is it important for people in recovery to be informed about policy and legislation?
No, absolutely. That is probably the question. And what I always say, and I said it last night in Fayetteville, you may not care about advocacy or politics, but I promise you it cares about you.
Hmm.
And by you, I mean any of my brothers and sisters or families impacted by this for the rest of the, you means all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to understand that if you believe, as I believe, the most impactful part of this disease is the stigma that surrounds it, then it's actually cool to know, too, that I speak three languages. You didn't know that? Mm-hmm. Southern, English, and political.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody in politics hears the word stigma, they don't hear the same thing we hear in this room. What a politician hears is this. That means controversy.
Mm.
And they don't like controversy. So we're asking a politician to do something controversial. They run from that. So we're asking them to help us. And you also have to accept the reality. And I'll give you a real example. Just 2 years ago at our state capitol in Atlanta, she meant every word of it. And the chairman, I used to work at the state senate, okay? So when she started to mention my name, the chairman was looking at me, and I was like, no, don't cut her off. Let her, I didn't know what she was going to say, but let her say whatever she's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her right. She had every right to say that. Don't misunderstand me. And I have every right to say she's the face of stigma. When I talk about people that hate us, I mean her. And if she had her way, we'd all be in jail. So why does advocacy matter to us? Because if you want your civil liberties, if you want your freedoms in a democracy, you got to fight for them. Because I promise you, there's people to think those addicts, we deserve nothing. If we want funding for programs to help people, like we were talking about before we went on air, that are in the criminal justice system, if we want funding for those programs, we got to fight for those. If we like recovery community organizations, we got to fight for that funding because there's people that want to take it from us. So the good news, bad news is we live in a democracy. That means we got to participate. If we show up, we will have great victories. If we do not show up, there are people that want to throw us under the jail and pretend we don't exist.
Yeah, because I've heard it explained like the quickest way to lose your rights is to only care about them. So I liked what you're saying about, you know, we have to fight for this stuff. So if we enjoy these things that we have as people in recovery, you know, whether it's state-funded things, you know, like the recovery community organizations are a huge one. It's like if we like these things, you know, we can't just enjoy that they're there. We need to use them. We need to show up for them. We need to, you know, support them how we can, whether that is on the local level or the legislative level. Because in any, with anything, there's going to be adversaries who are going to be loud about what they think, you know, and before the show, a few of us were talking about how there are people who don't want to see us recover. There are people that once they either see you in addiction or know that you were in addiction at one point, you will forever just be a junkie in their minds, and you'll never be a person in recovery no matter how much time you have.
And it's even more insidious than that. There's people that don't want to hire us at a company or let us rent an apartment or whatever. That's bad enough, right? But there's also predators that say they're trying to help us, that prey on us and try to bankrupt our families when they're at their lowest. And so we have laws in this, in certain states in this country, that protect us and our families. But Georgia, we don't have that law in the books yet. And we're working hard. And I do actually think we're going to get that law passed soon, probably next year. But, you know, it's there's all kinds of people that prey on us.
Well, there's the whole, like, you know, I see the billboards all the time reminding people about the Good Samaritan law. Like, if you, you know, if you call in about an overdose, you're safe and protected. But, you know, having to be informed that, hey, this law does exist implies that that law was not always there. And fortunately, that's not in a time that I've been, you know, living in. And so I have no idea what it would have been like back in the day. But that didn't just show up someday. Somebody had to fight for that.
And can I tell you really quick who did fight for that?
Yes.
So these two ladies, you know, it's okay to say this because she testifies about this all the time. Robin Elliott lives in Cobb County, Georgia. I mean, just around the corner from us. And look, this is powerful stuff. But her son was out with whoever he was out with before this law. And he was having a medical incident. And they threw his body out of the car and left him randomly on the side of the street somewhere to die. And he did. Because they were afraid that they'd all go to jail. And now that we have this law, we know lives have been saved. We know people are alive today because another person felt like they could call 911.
We have people in the studio raising their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Good Samaritan law is if somebody is overdosing or having a medical emergency due to drug abuse or alcohol or whatever the case is, that you can call EMT and medical services.
And you have to stay.
And that you won't be, if there is dope on the premises and paraphernalia, those things will not be, you're not going to get arrested for those
Correct.
Kind of things.
And we have it, they'll be taken. They might not let you keep it. But that's part of the deal.
Wait, let's add that caveat.
You're right.
But lose your dope, but save a life, okay?
And we do believe, most of us believe, that most police officers, law enforcement officers nowadays in Georgia get that law. And they kind of are with us in spirit and in fact. I will say, just for the record, that if you draw attention to yourself and act a fool and they do run you and you have a warrant, now you're not exempt from the warrant.
Yeah.
So when they show up, be cool.
Yeah. Be quiet.
You know?
Get your partner on the gurney. Don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's the best legal advice. Shut the truck up.
Right, right.
Okay, so let's see. I think maybe something to mention, you know, is we're in this community, and I remember this, like, from my days of working in entertainment, right, that my boss would always say, like, you can't start the book four pages in. You got to start the book on the cover because people don't know what you know, right? And so I think it's hard for some of us who are in active recovery and have been trying to enter recovery for so long, and we have these circles of recovery that we think that everybody understands, that we're all, that we're not, you know, all, to be alcoholic doesn't mean living under a bridge. To be an addict doesn't mean that you're, you know, shooting dope in your veins, that, you know, like, for me, I didn't lose everything in my addiction, right? So it didn't make me less of an addict, right? And I think that it's hard for us to think that there are people out there, and a lot of it's probably due to ignorance. They just don't understand. They've never seen it from our angle. And so for them, it's really easy to just go, okay, that's, they're the problem, and we need to do away with the problem. They're criminals, and they need to be treated as criminals. And so it's really their ignorance of why they kind of take that stance, right? I mean, is that what you felt when you heard Hertz talk about you in that way?
Oh, absolutely. And I also want you to understand, it's also, for me, for to use an I statement, you know, when I was in active addiction, you're talking to a guy who, when I worked for a member of Congress, and I'll remind everybody that I'm kind of old, you know, I was working for a member of Congress in the 90s when Bill Clinton was in the White House and Newt Gingrich from Georgia was Speaker. And the Speaker asked my boss to review the Clinton-Gingrich crime bill to make sure his team wanted to be for it. And my boss asked me to read it from a political perspective. And you know, I'm reading through this bill, and I'm in active addiction, understand. And we get down to the crack cocaine part of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, okay, it's great, Congressman. Now, it said put us in jail for 20 years. I told a member of Congress, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Because I was more afraid of him thinking that I even knew what it was, much less was using it.
Yeah.
Mm. So, look, let's be real. Even a lot of my brothers and sisters have shared the same sort of, I'd rather go to jail than let anybody know I was. So, look, it's not just everybody else. There's that stigma.
Yeah, within our own.
But here's one more, here's one more story. And this happened in Georgia 3 years ago. A lady wanted to put six beds for women, so forget us terrible guys, in a rural Georgia county, which had zero services 3 years ago, which is in and of itself, we could do an hour on why didn't the county have services, but they didn't. Six beds. Rural county. The county commission chairman was not just opposed. It's fine to be opposed to us. I mean, you can oppose us. That's fine. But he was ugly about it and unprofessional about it and kind of mean about it. And he said extremely disgusting things. These women will go to Atlanta and bring their people that don't look like us, like to our community, and
wow. Mm-hmm.
Crime. I mean, he was ugly, using racial slurs and everything. And it did not pass. Now, the good news for the facility is the county next door heard about this and they were like, come over here. Mm. And so now there is a place in rural Georgia with these six beds. We found out 2 years later that the commissioner, you see, I thought we were talking to a commissioner, right? I thought that's what it's for me on a business policy. As far as I was concerned, his name was commissioner. Mm-hmm. It didn't even matter what his real name was. Everything he said wasn't a theory or it wasn't an example. It was happening to his actual daughter in real life, in real time.
Oh. Mm.
So you see what I learned, even we always learn.
Yeah.
I realized the hope and joy of recovery. He didn't know that yet. Yeah. He knew the hell of the addiction and he was acting out. He could have been a truck driver and said, no truck, you know, hire anybody.
Yeah,
I mean, where he was so angry about what's going on with his daughter he just couldn't help anybody else yet. Mm-hmm. So one thing I think we have to remember is that somebody we encounter today who may insult us may be going through the very disease we're there to talk about themselves, and we don't realize it. And I think to be better stewards of our brothers and sisters, that's where we do say a prayer. Mm-hmm. And I've learned to do that. Just say, you know, if this person's going through this and isn't ready to say it, maybe that's where their opposition's coming from.
Yeah.
Because isn't, like, anger and denial, like, a huge part of grief? And, you know, when life isn't going the way you expect it to, or somebody else's life isn't going the way you expect it to, there is grief involved. You know, it's just, but when you're dealing with human emotions, it's very easy to buck up instead of practicing love and tolerance, right, speaking from experience. would much rather buck up and fight back than meet that with love, understanding, and compassion.
Yeah, compassion.
It's a tough one.
How do you approach, I think this is a really good, how do you approach educating legislators about the realities of addiction and recovery? How do you, like, literally... You know, I know I see pictures of you on the floor. I know you're in the circles and you're moving, but what? How do you do that?
So I think a couple of things. First of all, you got to know the secret sauce in the gumbo to know kind of that they want a blend of human stories. They want to know the human element of what you're talking about. And then you have to come with facts and figures to back it up. Hmm. So either one of those by themselves is not effective. You've got to be able to professionally bring them kind of a combination of what it takes to move them. Mm-hmm. And then you have to explain how it's real in their district. So you may have a rural conservative Republican down in farm country, you know, maybe, you know, Moultrie, Georgia, where there's more pecan trees than people, right? And they may think, well, that's an urban Atlanta thing, until you show them that when we tested the 988 line in Georgia on the pilot program, the vast majority of calls came from Southwest Georgia, not Atlanta. And he goes, why is that? And it's, well, they tell us that the stigma is so bad there that they were afraid to go somewhere in person, but they needed somebody to talk to. And you show them the overdose deaths. You show them the non-fatal cases. And you show them that alcohol is the worst drug of all of them. And they go, I didn't realize that was in my district. And remember, they don't know what they don't know. And then they got people telling them to oppose us. And then the other thing I'll say on that is we have to remind them that it's not a Republican disease or issue or a Democrat disease or issue. If there's one thing that I need every elected official to believe and all my brothers and sisters to believe, this is the one issue that's got to be bipartisan. Mm-hmm. You know, we need Joe Biden as much as we need Donald Trump. And you can hate Joe Biden, but you need his support. And you can think Donald Trump's the worst thing ever, but we need his support. So we've got to make this bipartisan.
Yeah.
You touched on, you mentioned the 988 line. And when you were on the show last year, we talked about, because it was in its early stages last year. Can you recap for our new listeners what the 988 line is?
Sure. Of course I can, because I was just in Philadelphia at NatCon and heard a session on 988. So what 988 is, it's designed for anybody, a person to remember, just like 911. But let's say, you know, it's not a car accident or it's not just strictly a violent situation. There's drugs and alcohol or mental health issues involved, and you need help. They want you to call 988 when it's primarily a mental health or drug situation, so that 911 can stay over here with car wrecks and home invasions and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they are getting better and better and better. The response time is very high now, and also, to that end, the other part of that equation is the crisis intervention training for police officers. More and more jurisdictions now are training either their officer or funding a civilian who's either a clinical civilian or a peer civilian to go to that call. Mm. And I met two civilians that were peers in their community. And now, there's safety protocols. If they don't feel safe, they'll back off and do whatever. But it's wonderful because we can both help law enforcement not have to come to a call that they're really not needed at, which mm-hmm. may help the person not go to jail. And then we have people that know how to help But the key to that is, if it is a crisis situation tonight, call 988 wherever you are.
And that's a federal,
nationwide. It's a federal nationwide.
Anywhere you are.
Anywhere you are.
Call 988 if awesome. You're dealing with a mental health or a substance use mm-hmm. issue. Yeah. Okay. We doing good?
Hell yeah.
You're talking very intelligently tonight.
It's the coat.
It's the coat.
Yeah, I like if I known you were going to wear a jacket, I'd have bought mine.
Yeah. this is, what are some of the key pieces of legislation or policies that are coming up that the recovery community should know about?
So I'm going to talk about federal and state.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So we'll start with federal.
Okay.
So there's, look, we don't even need to act like there's not. There's a lot of discussion going on across major news platforms about what the new Trump administration's going to do with lots of different things. Funding for SAMHSA, funding for mm-hmm. the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and the 988 line. My advice is, don't make your policy decision based on any one news story.
Okay.
Reporters have agendas too. People they talk to have agendas. If you're about to lose your contract, you're going to say things that may or may not be exactly what the administration is going to literally do. So first advice is, wait to, and I mean this for any administration, wait till they at least put out the actual press release that actually says what they're doing.
Mm, okay.
And then go, then it's fair game. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. But don't, that's one mistake that activists make. Oh, I saw on Fox News that Trump was going to cut this. Must be true. Trump's bad.
Right.
Did Trump say he was cutting it? No, Fox News did. They quoted somebody that doesn't work for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure we're professional about what we're doing. That's one. So there's things that are coming out of the administration that will change. There will be cuts. And we don't know what they're going to be yet. Now, our position is at the Georgia Council for Recovery, look, we're not here to tell Donald Trump how to employ people in a bureaucratic building in Washington, D.C. If some people lose their job, that's unfortunate, but that's probably going to happen. What we are here to say is, not only can you not cut funds for programs that go down into communities like Peachtree Corners, Georgia, you've got to increase funding
mm-hmm.
because the science, the numbers of the science demand that we need more funding for frontline programs in communities across America. So we don't care about what happens with the bureaucracy. We care about, we need to expand funding for peer-led and clinical-led programs in communities across Georgia. So that's going on in D.C. That fight's going on. Now, at the state, some very exciting things going on. We're working on a law right now. Georgia's one of just a few states that doesn't define legally alcohol as a drug. And it's a long, convoluted thing that goes back to the 50s. And we're okay. not... We're gonna work.
Alcohol kills four times yeah, as many people,
and we're not trying to change the law that would in any way impact yeah. our friends
who drink or sell
legal products. It yeah. has nothing to do with that. It just, if we change it in the code, it will allow universities in Georgia and state agencies in Georgia to use dollars for research
oh.
and programs for people impacted by the disease. So we've got that bill. We're very excited about that. We've got to build a
And that's at a state level.
State level. I'm talking state yeah. level now. We got okay. a bill coming up next year to protect RCOs. We have more RCOs, recovery community organizations, peer-led operations, post-treatment, for those that don't know. We have more of them in Georgia than any state except Texas. We have 46 of them right now. We got a couple more in the works. I was just at Fayette County last night where they're starting one. We'll be in Augusta next Wednesday where they're starting one. Well, the more popular you become, the more folks might want to scam. And so we've got some language that we hope the General Assembly will pass to just provide legal protection so that nobody gets, you know, taken advantage of.
Okay.
Then we've got a bill that is probably the most impactful bill. And this bill will mandate that if a person's at any level, I'm not a lawyer, Okay. And I didn't save the Holiday Inn Express last night. So, you know, I can't. If you're old, you get that joke.
That's the OG reference.
Because that was their whole thing. But if you're in the criminal justice system, the state will provide peer-led support for you, whether you're on probation, whether you're in life sentence, whether you're child diversion. It doesn't matter where you are at any part of the system. We will have peer support for addiction recovery everywhere in the state. Will that be expensive? You absolutely bet it will be expensive. Will it necessarily pass completely next year? No, but we're going to have a debate about that. And we hope at least a pilot program comes out of it or something where we can. The reality is we're not going to not have people in jail next year or prison.
Yeah.
But if we're going to do that and we're going to say it's a disease, then we're going to fight like goodness to say part of what they need and deserve while they're in state custody is a chance to understand how to get better. And Georgia can do better than we're doing now.
Yeah.
So those three bills right there that we'll be working
yeah.
on.
Yeah. That's great. And isn't there one, I don't know, regarding sober livings or...
Oh, sorry. Actually, that's actually a great... So one success we had this session, we successfully, and we were pleased to be involved with this, the General Assembly passed a bill, and the governor, I'm sure, will sign it because they supported it, to... expand what's called the Behavioral Health Reform Innovation Commission. Okay, they have long names in government. But this one is important to all of us because it actually has a committee that's going to be created for the first time for addiction. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty confident that Commissioner Kevin Tanner of DBHDD, the Georgia Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, another long name. yep.
I'm glad you're in this. Yeah. I'm glad you're up out the Capitol and you're right. representing us, dog. But I would have been just GB do do do.
Right. So I was in Philadelphia at this conference and I told these people from all these states, I said, look, it's DBHD, don't worry about it. It's the longest name you've ever seen. But I do think Commissioner Tanner is going to do right by us. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to have some people with lived experience, some peers on this committee. I really do believe that. I think he'll have some family members on this committee and clinical people. And I think we're going to have a committee with real power. A commission has real power. It's not a study committee. And we will see legislation, I'm extremely confident, language for legislation come out of this committee that will be supported by GAR. Mm-hmm. Supported by the state agency that has to enforce the rules and supported by the General Assembly Working Group on Addiction and Recovery. And we believe that will be the right formula to get it actually passed. So there should be some new provisions that GAR, our friends at the Georgia Association of Recovery Residencies, endorse and support and are asking for.
Yeah.
And that's been surprising, but not to me. Because I'm on team bureaucrat, okay? I mean, I've been a bureaucrat before, and that's great, and they're great people. But when you do a new law or a new policy, it means more work for them, right? And new work for them. And they're humans. Well, what do you mean I got to do more? I don't want to do more. I'm used to do.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They had a lot of questions. So we're sitting there walking in going, families are being exploited. Peers are being exploited. Good people who are trying to do the right thing are being made to look bad by bad apples. And we're asking to be regulated. Mm-hmm. You think they'd go, well, sure, we'll regulate you. There's more regulations to get your hair cut in the state of Georgia tonight if you want to be a hairstylist. Mm-hmm. There's more regulations for that than there is to run a sober living home.
Come on.
That's the truth.
Come on. Well, yeah, because you have professions like that, whether it's, you know, they're piercing, tattoo artistry, hairstyling, cosmetology, any of that stuff, chiropractic. There's so many where there's yearly required continuing education classes. Right. Whereas when I'm just going to assume when it comes to sober livings and things in that nature, outside of the actual treatment professionals like your doctors, your nurse practitioners, your CNAs, there's not going to be much continuing education. You don't have to be kept up to date. Yeah, and that's an important thing because, you know, sanitation practices, if we go to like cosmetology and piercing and stuff, sanitation practices of 10 years ago are going to be a lot different than sanitation practices of today as research and science and all that sort of stuff develops. And you need to be up to date. And so as policies change and you know, morph and adapt, people need to be kept up to date, but at this point, I'm just assuming it's on the person's due diligence, people don't really uphold due diligence if they don't have to.
The members of GAR who have integrity and are here to actually help, they self-police themselves, right? But you could have a bad operator in the heart of downtown Atlanta just operating in plain sight, or some rural out-of-the-way place down the road. I mean, how many families have they ripped off and drained their bank accounts? You know, and preyed on the fear they're going through with their loved one. That's real stuff. So I think we'll see language for that through this commission. And this commission, I'm confident, will also invite people to come in and share ideas. And so the Georgia Council, once those dates are set, will publicize those on our social media. And we will want peers and family members and clinicians and everybody to come down and share ideas and share thoughts, because the more the decision makers hear our voices, the more they want to vote for us.
Yeah. We went to one event where we all went into the big room in the dome.
I saw pictures from this.
Yeah. I sound really smart.
You look real smart.
We're in that big, the gold room, and then we're in the room
right.
where everyone sits, and they all have the desks,
yeah.
and they look like really fancy school desks.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of information being shared, and there was someone who spoke about this GAR thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in 7 minutes, she had totally convinced me of like, oh, absolutely, we need to regulate sober livings. Like, there needs to be more, and not only regulated, but enforced regulation.
That was Candace, the executive director of GAR.
Yes.
Sorry.
We're trying to get her to come on the show to talk more about that.
Candace, come on the show. It's great.
Yeah, because that was a real eye-opener. And there were other things. The other thing that was really eye-opening to me was somebody had said that with these committees and these things is to make sure that a peer was represented there. Anybody who was making policy or advising in anything that had to do with any kind of substance use area in Georgia, that they want to make sure that there's at least one or two peers
Absolutely.
In that, so that someone with lived experience can be like, that's a great idea, but you've never been there.
Right. So our posture on that is, look, first of all, I believe, and the council I'm sure believes, addiction's a family disease. And you know, we love our family members, and their voice needs to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And we love clinical people that work very professionally, maybe for not a lot of money, because they have a heart to save us. And we need their voice heard. But the most important voice in the conversation must be the peer voice, the survivor, the lived experience. We are the most authentic voice. And so not only should we be there, we're the most important voice that must be there. And our position is, if we're not there, it was illegitimate. So, again, Commissioner Kevin Tanner did something awesome. So everybody knows about these opioid settlement funds. Mm-hmm. Georgia gets a whole bunch of money over 19 years, and every state gets a bunch of money. Well, not every state's Georgia. So in Georgia, we have these committees by regions, right, that vote on the applications, okay? And they do them geographically.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Tanner listened to our community, and when they were establishing the number of people that would be on the committee and what type of people would you be, law enforcement, faith, you know, academic, he mandated that one of the voters in each of the districts has to be a peer with lived experience.
Wow.
And that's a big deal, because in every state, that's not true. So now we have a peer in every region with one of the 7 votes in every region. That's an awesome thing for Georgia. And big shout out to Commissioner Tanner and DBHCD and the Georgia Council for Recovery, because that's now real.
Yeah.
So peers are voting on that money.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like elementary school history class when it was like, no taxation without representation.
Exactly.
We need a Schoolhouse Rock song for peer support.
Okay. So, you know, we're a bunch of beautiful misfits, and someone might be watching or listening and thinking, okay, cool, glad you're doing all that, you know, I got to go to my meeting.
Sure.
But what can we do? Right? Little old homie, you know, who just barely got his bank account back and paid back Wells Fargo. And he's, you know, finally working for 6 months. And he's finally like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, no.
What can that person do?
Right. So not everybody can do what I do and spend every day at the Capitol. I get that. But we're building what we call a constituency of consequence. We're building an army. Mm-hmm. And everybody can do something. Now, most of my brothers and sisters, no matter how, most have a smartphone these days. Mm-hmm. I know a few don't, but most do. That's our weapon. Mm. That's our tool. If we have a smartphone, then you're a part of the army if you choose to be. Because last time I checked, Facebook, X or Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, they're all free. And this is serious. I'm not joking around. I'm being dead serious. So Most High Media is on social media. So the very, very – and then first we'll talk virtually, and then we'll talk in person. Okay.
Yeah.
So virtually, sitting in your apartment – like, I like to watch Braves games with Jack, my son, Jack Breed. Hey, Jack Breedlove, I'm sure he's watching. Jack and I like to watch the Braves games. Well, you know, look, they're 9 innings long, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe you have a favorite TV show that you binge watch over and over. Look, while you're sitting in your favorite chair, you can go to social media and spend 5 minutes. I didn't say 5 hours. I meant 5 minutes. And look at what the Most High Media posted on Monday and like it. Mm-hmm. Or God forbid, share it. Mm-hmm. And God forbid, make a comment like, good job. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't say write War and Peace, just say good job.
Yeah.
That's advocacy. Because that takes the algorithm of Most High Media up and more people see their post and more people see about recovery. Let me tell y'all about X, and some people like Elon Musk and some don't, and I don't care. I've never met the guy. He didn't pay me anything. But I do know this. On X, hashtags are a big deal. And so if you're into baseball, you could write hashtag MLB, and you can go straight to that hashtag and see everything people are talking about baseball, right? You can everything else. Well, we have one in Georgia called Georgia Recovers.
GA Recovers.
And we also have GAPOL. GAPOL means Georgia Politics, GAPOL. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you who's on GAPOL every day, 7 days a week. The governor. His staff, reporters for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Add that hashtag.
Lobbyists.
Yeah.
Other they're on there. Why are they on there? They want to know what's going on in politics in
Georgia.
Maybe
not for Montana Monday, though.
So when we take a picture tonight before we leave,
yeah,
and I post that picture on Twitter,
yeah,
it'll have that hashtag.
Yeah.
And everybody that sees that hashtag will know that tonight I was on Most High Media. Mm-hmm. But think about this. What if all of us did that?
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, well, yeah, okay, Jeff's great, but there were 7 other people. After a while, that's going to start to change their perceptions.
Yeah.
So everybody can help by simply getting engaged on social media on their phone virtually. Let me give you a real example of how you could really help. So say you decide to follow the Georgia Council for Recovery because we do advocacy. But you're not – okay, I'll go so far as to sign up for your emails. And when you send them, I might open them. Okay, great. And we have this little automated email thing. And we've already written the email. All you got to do is put your name in there, and it goes to your senator. You don't have to know who they are. Let me tell you how – I know it works. We secured in the budget – this is another success, and I was kind of – I presume we would get to this example. We secured in your – oh, the governor signed the budget today, and he left this in the budget. The governor can take things out of the budget. The governor left in the budget $1 million new dollars for an alcohol use disorder program at Northeast Georgia Medical Center. Yeah. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Peer-led with some clinical support. Most – there wasn't a lot of new dollars in the budget. There were not. We got a million of them for AUD. Now, and he did sign the budget today. And this is what I want to tell you. We had over 5,000, to answer your question, 5,700 plus of the people you just described, our brothers and sisters who maybe just aren't into this, whether they're just out one day or out 10 years, they're just not into it.
Mm-hmm.
But 5,700 of us – sent an automated email in asking for that $1 million. And I have had the chairman of one of the committees that makes that decision go, we got 5,700 emails.
Mm-hmm.
It worked.
Yeah.
So you don't have to even write the freaking email. If you just trust the Georgia Council, when we say send this email in,
yeah,
you can help. We produced $1 million.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So all you got to do is just, all I'm trying to say is we don't need a lot of your time mm-hmm. to be in the Army. Just give us a little bit of your time.
Yeah.
Show up at ARAT.
Yes.
You know? Let me tell you what happens at ARAT. We had more people in the building for
Wait, what's ARAT?
Oh, sorry. Acronym alert. Addiction Recovery Awareness Day. It's our day down at the state capitol. Okay? We had more people down there for ARAD the past 5 years in a row than any other event in the building, except this year, one event that the governor did himself. And I'll come in second place to the governor because, you know, he's the governor.
Yeah.
But it makes an impact when there's 1,300 of us down at the Capitol,
yeah.
and maybe we're wearing no high, like the most high T-shirts, and there's five or six people wearing that shirt, and there's five or six people wearing a shirt. Who did the zone the other day? He was at the zone. Five or six people wearing the zone shirt, and five or six people wearing Rise Up T-shirt. They go, well, damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people that support this.
Yeah.
So show up occasionally, but yeah. virtually, you can really make a difference.
Now, with, you know, addicts and alcoholics, we are very much all or nothing people. So
I don't know what that means.
So when it comes to things that, I mean, speaking from personal experience, when there's policies in the works that would directly impact, you know, myself or my community, I tend to get way overly informed
sure.
and can, you know, inform myself into anxiety. I can't, you know, it will impact my day to day because it's all I can think about. So as someone who is in this day in, day out, what is some advice that you could give people to not burn out, you know, to
no.
actually moderate, which we were so very good at.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, that is a great question. How do you not let what's going on impact our sobriety itself?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to sugarcoat it. I mean, democracy is going to happen. The decisions are going to make, be, you know, whether we show up or not. Look, I've been to China, okay, twice, as a guest of the government. And I've seen the vans on Tiananmen Square, where if you criticize the government too far, you literally get put in the van and your family never sees you again. We don't have that. Trump doesn't do that. Biden didn't do it. Governor Kemp doesn't do it. Stacey Abrams. We don't do that here. So that's a whole different level of stress, right?
Yeah.
So what I would say here is, you know, just remember this. We had a bill this year, Senate Bill 79. It addresses fentanyl sentencing where fentanyl is involved, where a death occurs. So when the bill was introduced, it had two sections that were relevant to what we're talking about. One was for an amount that was for a user consumption amount, and one was for amounts that are trafficking. So all of us on the first version of that bill, if you and I were friends and I went out and bought, let's say it was a pill, mm-hmm. I bought a pill, for whatever reason we encountered law enforcement and they test it and there's fentanyl, we're out of here for 20 to 30 years under the first version of the bill. So there was a lot of this happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people started stressing out. Well, I didn't know there was fentanyl in there, and I'm sick, and you're in a people were freaking out about that. But that was just when the bill was introduced. Because we showed up, because we testified,
mm-hmm.
because we sent emails in, because we did post, they took that part of the bill out.
Mm.
So the law that's in effect, it's going to be signed Monday. I'll be there when the governor signs it into law. It will not send two people in active addiction who are legitimately sick and only have a small amount of fentanyl on them to jail for 20 years, no questions asked. It will still send traffickers, and that's a whole other
yeah.
point. Mm-hmm. The bill's not perfect. I'm not saying the bill's perfect. But we took the worst part of the bill that just impacted two random people.
Mm-hmm.
So what's more stressful? My point. Is it more stressful to go, oh God, this is in the bill and I hate it? Or is it like, okay, there's a chance to get rid of it? Or is it, oh my God, he's signing a bill into law that's going to throw... To me, that's what stresses me out, is if we don't do something and we didn't try. Mm-hmm. So, look, you got to have self-care, and I get that. But what I'm really trying to say is, just because something appears bad at the beginning of the process, it doesn't mean we can't make it good at the end of the process and feel pretty good about ourselves. And I'm serious about that.
Yeah.
We can change laws, and we changed that law this year.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned is, you know, part about when you're advocating and educating, you know, political people, that story. And that's kind of our thing, right? It's story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the power of story, and humans communicate by story. And, you know, I think we learn best by hearing someone else's story. And then we go, oh, that's me. I understand. That resonates with me. And it gives people that golden shovel moment of like, oh, they get their own epiphanies and their own ideas, and they start thinking, oh, maybe this is possible for me. How do we, and I know that, how do we keep doing what we're doing, and how do we get these stories out so that more people understand that, you know, a life, people in recovery are very different from people who are in active addiction. I mean, somebody in recovery, by and large, they're probably going to be some of the most loyal, dedicated, hardworking employees you can hire. They're going to be honest. I mean, this is people in recovery, right? So how do we share that story beyond like the social media and encourage people to, I guess, kind of come out of hiding with their victories in recovery?
You know, I can't tell you how many people approach me at the Capitol. I get a call from a mayor. I get a call from a district attorney. I need to talk to you. Why? Well, my loved one is in active addiction. It happens to every family. So the first way we do that is to remember that to everybody else, we're subject matter experts. We say peer, right? We've said peer several times tonight. You know what they say in that language? That they say survivor. Mm. I was in New York City. I'm also with the American Addiction Recovery Association, shameless plug, the AARA. We had this big meeting at one of those big fancy boardrooms in New York City. There were some big cheeses around the table. And this one guy, who I could tell was very successful, finally interrupted me and he said, you know, Jeff, what's a peer? And I look at him and he goes, what's a peer? I don't know what a peer is. And he said, oh, you mean a survivor.
Oh.
Mm. And I realized, they don't talk like we talk. He's like, you survived this disease. You're a survivor. And I realized, so in his language, I was like, yes, sir. Remember, if you believe this is killing their family members, impacting their family members, bankrupting their families, they want us. They are desperate for us to proclaim that recovery is real, that anybody can recover, that everybody can recover. Oh, sure, there's things we need to do to help along the way, but forget all that. Is it real for anybody and everybody? Yes, and they're desperate to have somebody say it. Now,
yeah,
I'm all for anonymity, and if you need anonymity for your recovery, that's what you should do. God bless you for that. My cousin, David Breedlove, is 57 years old. And he lives in Walton County, Georgia. He used to live in Gwinnett County, Georgia. And he has been in recovery for 30-something years. Because in high school in the 80s, it was alcohol. And he got really out of hand. He got in recovery. And he's been in recovery all of his adult life in anonymity. And he got elected to the Walton County School Board. And then reelected. And then reelected. But he decided that he was ready to tell his story. Because something had happened to a student at one of the schools. And he's like, you know, I could help it if I told people. But see, Dave did it on his timeline.
Yeah.
So anonymity's great. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand. But if you can recover out loud, if that's on your heart to recover out loud, the first thing I would say is, I promise you this. When you go in the room, and go into rooms, Go into every room you go into, whether it's a nightclub, whether it's a church, whether it's a PTA meeting, a Rotary Club meeting. When you go in there and say, you know, I'm a 30-year-old man who joined the Roswell Rotary Club,
mm-hmm.
and I've been to 200 meetings, and we've had speakers talk about everything, but ain't nobody ever talked about addiction. And you're a member? Walk up to the program chair and go, hey, can I talk about addiction? The program chair is going to go, well, thank God somebody wants to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want you to have confidence that our community is desperate for us to show them that it's okay to talk about this.
Yeah.
I hope that was okay.
It's funny. No, you mentioned nightclubs because I was last year.
I looked at you when I said that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that part. yeah, but last year
that's
I was on
the
a
post show. We go into the nightclub.
I was on a date with somebody and we went to this concert and it's a metal show. You know, there's usually like a lot of drinking and stuff. And
at a metal show, really?
Yeah, it's okay. Crazy.
Shocked.
And so they're introducing me to some of their friends, and each time we meet somebody new. They're like, yeah, and she's sober.
Like, double sober. She's double. Not just sober tonight, like really forever, sober. Like always.
Yeah, like
sober.
She goes to meetings and stuff. Like she's for real sober. I'm like, you could be too. but I just thought it was funny. That was the only thing they were sharing about me was that I was sober. And I was like, you know what? That's pretty cool. If that's what people think is cool about me, then hell yeah, because right. I'm proud to be sober.
But you know, I think of us in this room and the thousands of people watching us on the stream. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that when I was in active addiction was just waiting for somebody to say something that I could relate to.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for years nobody ever did. And now maybe they didn't know how to or whatever those 30 years ago. But fentanyl changed everything, and we need to be real about this. You know, 8 years ago when I was out, and my drug of choice was crack cocaine. Maybe I didn't say that earlier, but that was my drug of choice. And that's really all I ever did. I'm not saying I didn't try, but I never tried anything. I didn't like anything else.
Mm-hmm.
When I was out buying crack 8 years ago, you know, I knew there was an understanding. As long as you didn't rip the people off and didn't lie to the people, they wanted you as a repeat customer.
Mm.
I mean, that was like a business. My mom and dad and wife had a hard time understanding that, but they really wanted you back as a repeat customer. and we understand that. Fentanyl changed everything.
Yeah.
They don't care if you're back as a repeat customer or not. So my message of why we need to talk is because our brothers and sisters don't get the privilege of experimentation like I had 8 years ago.
Yeah.
It really is true, and it's not a partisan statement. One pill does kill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it kills dead.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can't help but think of my friend Andrea Thomas, who lost her daughter, and she's doing a lot of work at a federal level to try to really help people understand the difference between overdose and poisoning.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And about really hammering in that language of understanding that when someone takes a pill that they think is one thing, and it has fentanyl in it, and they die, that's not an overdose.
Correct.
That's mm-hmm. a poisoning.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really important separation, because I think for the mass public, they hear overdose and they think railroad tracks and under the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But poisoning is what's happening to most. I think, if I'm correct, I think most of the fentanyl deaths, I think most of them are poisoning.
Mm-hmm. And we have to love on the families. And I don't care if it's the mama and daddy, the spouse, the son, the daughter, the cousin, the sibling. We have to love on them, because all of a sudden death hit them around our issue, and they've buried their loved one, and they're trying to figure this out. And look, they're humans, mm-hmm. and us survivors, peers, we have a choice. And I'm just being adult about this. If we love on them and let them say in their grief what they need to say,
mm.
we're going to build the strongest alliance we've ever built.
Yeah.
Because once they work through that grief, They're going to say, I don't want it to happen to another kid. Let me join y'all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me stand with y'all. But if we get all up in them and like, well, don't you dare call me a name.
Mm-hmm.
1 week after you buried your loved one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at us and go, well, the heck with you.
Yeah.
So we have a choice as a community. Do we love on folks as Christians or whatever your belief system is and give them grace to go through that and then become our friends and allies? Yeah. Or do we get all up in their face and frankly torque them off? Or are they like, well,
yeah,
you know, and that's something we have to deal with as a community, because let's go back to that 988 law. Mm-hmm. By the way, it celebrated its 10th anniversary on the floor of that big room we were in this year that they gave Robin Elliott and her team a proclamation for 10 years of the bill. Well, look, I've been in a policy discussion. I go to a lot of policy discussions with parents and family members who lost a loved one before fentanyl, and family members that have lost people due to fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't always agree because their worldviews are different.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way, just scientifically, the way these deaths occurred and the way these deaths occurred were not the same.
Yeah, it's very different.
And family members are trying to figure out how they can be united in 2025, because the way Laurie's son died is not the same way that Andrea's son died.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a big piece. Her and Mike Fiore, you know, they talk about that connection of the families and the recovery community, and how together, if we join together, and I've always felt like even on this show, like that's such an underrepresented voice. Mm-hmm. It's the families of people who have to learn how to live post.
Well, that's one reason why Scott Scott Cochran, who's the president of the American Addiction Recovery Association, a guy in recovery. Happens to have 8 national championship football rings. He happens to have been Narcan'd because he died.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we wanted to start AARA is we believe there has to be a national voice that combines families and peers together.
Yeah.
We have to do for our disease what the AIDS community did for that medical issue.
Yeah.
And we are not there yet.
Yeah.
You know the number one funded medical research by your United States Congress is today? It's money for AIDS research. And I'm all for money for AIDS research. And they should give more. That's not my point.
Right.
But the number one cause of death tonight in the United States, here in DeKalb and Gwinnett County line where we are, for Americans 18 to 45, are those fentanyl overdoses, fentanyl poisonings and overdoses.
Yeah.
And we're not anywhere close to being the number one federally funded disease. And let me tell you whose fault that is.
Yeah, it's ours.
It's our fault.
Yeah.
Because we don't go up to Congress I saw the sign in the lobby, and it was, one of the words was consistency, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the most important, whatever the other two words on that banner were, mm-hmm. that's the most important one.
Yeah.
We're not there.
It's not the funnest one, but
we don't go consistently and advocate for ourselves.
Yeah.
Because coming to ARAD's great, but that's one day.
Yeah.
So we have to show up regularly in Washington, regularly in Atlanta, and most importantly, regularly at each of these different cities that are represented here, at that city council meeting, at that county commission meeting, at almost every county commission meeting in Georgia, which I know everybody goes to.
Yeah, they're popping.
Popping.
It's a new nightclub, I heard.
I was at the last county meeting, boys.
Right. But let me tell you.
Turning it up on a Tuesday.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are people that show up.
Yes.
And there's public comment time.
Yeah.
And you get about 2 minutes.
Talk it. Come on.
And there's people that show up and say to their commissioners, I want out of our county budget $1 million for AIDS projects. I want $1 million for cancer projects. I want $1 million for Alzheimer's projects. They go and ask.
Mm.
We don't go and ask.
Mm.
Why doesn't DeKalb County give $1 million for recovery? Mainly because we didn't ask.
Yeah.
Because we don't go. Yeah. So that's what advocacy can do. It doesn't have to be in Washington, D.C. or even Atlanta.
Yeah.
You could go to your little town square, to your county commission and your city council, waltz right in there, grab a little note for public comment. What are we doing to fund addiction programs in our county and state, city?
Well, those great listening sessions we have all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's really good. I think at a local level, you have a little more, you might see a little more action, you know, and there's less people to convince, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's more direct, kind of like saying, hey, here we can, and here's an organization that's doing something in your community that isn't funded, that could be funded, and if they were funded, they could do this, and don't you want that in your community?
Oh, look, my favorite example of that is when I was chief of staff for a commissioner in DeKalb County, these groups would, they knew how to, a visual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they would show up, I'm sure they were just from Walmart or something, they'd all go get the same color t-shirt. So you'd have 12, 13 people. I don't mean 200.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this room. But they'd all go buy the same bright yellow shirt for $5 at Walmart. Well, when you're sitting up on that dais looking down, you go, oh, my God, there's a lot of people here for that issue. So for $30,
yeah,
they're asking for a million. And they're freaking the commissioners out because they go, people care about this.
Yeah.
We can do that same stuff.
I love it. That's good.
Good.
Yeah. Jeff, as always, thank you so much for taking the time and kicking in with us. And thank you again for just recovering out loud and for, you know, representing us in that big room underneath that gold dome in downtown Atlanta, that magical place.
That's real gold, by the way.
It is. It is. Yeah, I tried to get some, but they wouldn't let me. And thank you to the donors and supporters who make this show possible. And thank you for everyone for showing up tonight. This has been an episode of The Most High Show.
Yay.